Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to another episode of Surviving the Survivor. It is the podcast that promises to bring you the very best guests in all of true crime. It is not a tagline. It is our reality. And tonight, y'all are in for a big treat because this is a very special panel. First, the latest news. Governor Hochul out of the great state of New York, she is vowing swift extradition of Luigi Mangione back to New York from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to face these murder charges. And they are the most serious murder in the first degree. Multiple news agencies reporting this evening that Luigi Mangione is expected to waive extradition. Tomorrow is going to be a busy day. About the last one I can take right now. I've been a lot of busy days lately, and I promised my chiropractor I was going to straighten the computer, which I sort of did. Shout out to Naomi from Surfside Chiropractic. Anyway, she's been snapping my neck, which is a little scary. So these multiple news agencies are reporting that he's going to waive his extradition tomorrow. Of course, just this past Tuesday, as I said, he's charged with first-degree murder in the assassination of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Here at STS, we always are thinking of the victims. So unfortunately, you see Luigi's picture all over the place. Nicole, thank you for asking. She's asking about the neck. Never had a neck issue in my life, but you can add that to the list. It's bothered me, but it's okay. Without further ado, before I say that, so a lot of people, the betting odds are that Luigi Mangione is going to be, again, waiving extradition. They're expecting NYPD detectives there tomorrow who will then bring him back to New York City, where he'll go to central booking and then likely be spit out to the infamous Rikers Island jail prison in New York City. So without further ado, she is known as the Rikers whistleblower, Justina Brzezinski. Close?
Yes.
Close enough. I'll go with Justina. She is known as the whistleblower at Rikers. She exposed abusive and inhumane treatment of severely mentally ill patients, including the misuse of solitary confinement. Her advocacy and her efforts to hold the system accountable led to a Department of Investigation inquiry, underscoring her commitment to reform and social justice. She is also currently a PhD candidate at the Wurzweiler School of Social Work at Yeshiva University in New York City, and holds a BA in forensic psychology from John Jay College. Darren Mack, you see the name. He was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, in a community that was plagued with a high concentration of poverty, substandard schools, and high rates of unemployment among Black and Latino males. In 1992, at the age of 17, Darren was arrested for being an accomplice to a robbery, ultimately sentenced to 20 to 40 years in New York, in the New York State prison system. And the first time he was in, he served a total of 20 years straight. So he definitely understands, and he has been behind bars in Rikers. Last, certainly not least here, Edwin Hernandez. He's a man of many hats. He's a fierce advocate for justice. Among his notable feats, he re-entered society after serving 5 years of incarceration, and he was able to become a certified recovery peer advocate and community organizer. He works with a lot of different campaigns, including, trying to get justice for some of these inmates at Rikers Island and at least get reform there. So we're going to dive right into it. And Justina, let me start with you. And then, as we usually do on this show in the evening, I will sprinkle in the latest news as we go. But Justina, tell me, how long were you working for at Rikers? And, you know, I've done a lot of stories on whistleblowers in my career, and they always go after the whistleblowers because, you know, you speak up and then the government usually comes after you. The big one that I dealt with at Fox 5 when I was a reporter in New York City, we had air traffic controllers sleeping on the job at Westchester County Airport, where President Obama was flying in and out of. They got a lot of commercial flights. They had computers. They weren't supposed to have them. It was because an FAA whistleblower, and then that guy was really hunted down by the federal government. They did not want him talking, and they were not happy with him. But what made you decide? First of all, tell us what you were doing there, and then what made you finally decide that you couldn't really take it much longer and you had to blow the whistle?
Thank you. So while I was on Rikers, I was the clinical supervisor of the mental health units, and I only worked there for 9 months. My first day was in December of 2023, and then I resigned in August, and my last day was in September. And it was only 9 months, but after seeing everything that was going on, I knew that I couldn't make a difference while working there. I wanted to work there to make a difference, and I realized that I'm not going to be able to do that there. So I made the decision to contact certain people and tell them what's going on, and then I resigned, and the story came out.
And what was it like for you once it did come out? I mean, you were in the headlines. I think it was October. What was that like for you personally?
It was something I did not expect. I didn't think this story would be so big, and I'm glad that it is because people need to know about what's really going on in the inside. But it was overwhelming. But I received so much support from so many organizations and people like Darren and Edwin. And, it was just an experience that I will never forget.
Darren, to you, you served 20 straight years, so you've been inside Rikers. Tomorrow, more than likely, it's going to be a busy day again. Luigi Mangione, this guy is going to start his day in Pennsylvania, but again, NYPD detectives expected to pick him up and then take him to central booking. I know it was a long time for you, but what's it like when you're booked in, you've got the mugshots taken, and then you're bust out to Rikers? It's got to be scary as hell.
It's a definitely a horrific experience, being in a cell with 20 or 30 or more people. That's like unsanitary, with roaches and things like that. Then going to Rikers, people need to know that in New York City, there's actually 14 jails across the city. A jail next to the Queens Court, jail next to the Brooklyn Court, Bronx Court, the Manhattan Court. And that Rikers Island is not a prison like Attica or San Quentin. Rikers is a pre-trial jail complex with 10 jails on 400 acres of land. In fact, Rikers Island, I would argue, is the last penal colony in the United States with approximately like 90% of the people detained there on Rikers today are there pre-trial, meaning they haven't had their day in court. And the rest of the small population are like city sentence of a year or less, and a few are waiting to be transferred to a state prison. But it's horrific, for the thousands of people who are detained there today. My experience there, it was basically you're either predator or prey. The dysfunction, the culture of violence, and the corruption, that exists on Rikers Island for too long. Survivors like myself and Edwin understood that it can't be fixed and it can't be reformed. And that's why, we, started the campaign to close Rikers, because it's a human rights crisis happening there right now for thousands of people.
I grew up in New Jersey, worked in New York City a long time. I got to be honest, I don't think I've ever actually seen Rikers Island, which is a good thing. But it's like, I was watching some video yesterday, and it is, there's some, we have a big, a community overseas as well. Olive Green coming to us up from overseas saying it's huge. I had no idea. Yeah, it is massive. And again, as Darren was saying, this is where you go before you are tried. So everyone has got a presumption of innocence. Harvey Weinstein, someone said he was notably there. He's not doing well health-wise. Emmy here wants to know the hearing. So his preliminary hearing is tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. I think we're going to bring that to you live. There's no cameras, but there will certainly be cameras outside the courthouse in Pennsylvania. And again, there will be a handoff reportedly to NYPD detectives. Now, that everything is subject to change. He could decide last minute he doesn't want to waive extradition, in which case the governor is going to step in. When he gets to New York, if he does, he is expected to go to Rikers. But as you're going to hear from these guests, it is a notorious, notorious place. And he's a very high profile inmate. So there's a chance they switch that too. Like in Pennsylvania right now, he's at a state prison, not at a jail. So, Edwin, to you, what was it, if you're, willing to share that, the kind of brought you down that road, that got you in trouble? And then much more importantly, how are you able to get out of it and kind of turn your life around?
Before I get into that, I would just like to give my condolences to the individuals who, to their families that have lost their life over the past year. And that goes to individuals who were detained on the island, as well as the correction officers. There was recently a death on the island of a correction officer who was unable to receive medical attention in a duly time. And my lived experience led me down a path of substance abuse and just making the wrong connections, social connections with the bad people in the neighborhood. And just being able to receive the therapeutic assistance needed really assisted me in changing my life around. I'm sorry, my dog is on me.
It's all right. And, we're dog friendly, by the way. They want to see that, though. What's your dog's name?
Tank.
Tank. All right. Pitbull?
Yeah. Oh. A bully.
Yeah.
Great. He's very lovable. Yeah. So just making the bad social connections and just adjusting into a different setting once released back into society. You know, and my experience there on Rikers Island was nothing short of animalistic. You know, he should actually expect to have his basic human rights violated and his needs ignored. Aside from that, depending on the classification that he's in, it's just like Darren said, predator versus prey.
Fascinating, not surprising, but fascinating and scary as hell. From the long running kind of joke within SCS Nation, I am terrified of prisons. So they'll make fun of me tonight. But why can it not be fixed? Justina, to you, I think you said that it can't be fixed. Why do you say that? What needs to be done? By the way, this is obviously going to be a show about Rikers, but also weaving in all the news with Luigi Mangione, who is expected to end up there. But why the issue of not being fixable, Justina?
Right. So there's so much corruption there, and it would just wouldn't be able to be fixed unless we close Rikers and build those new jails. Like, it's the whole Department of Corrections that's corrupt. So that whole system would have to be changed. But it can't be fixed by just people that are working there or people that are advocating. Like, the whole Rikers has to shut down.
I think this is B-roll that the COE is about to play. Great minds think alike. This is the complex. You know, in New York City, short, but you get the idea how big it is there. And you heard Darren say it's 11 jails on this complex. And again, pretrial jails. So these are people who are awaiting trial. Darren, to you, this is something I think it fascinates me. I think it fascinates a lot of people. So he goes to central booking. He gets fingerprinted. When he arrives at Rikers Island, tell us the process and what the like the reception will be like for him from other inmates there.
Yeah, so there's one bridge that leads to Rikers. It's one bridge that gets you there and one bridge to leave from there. And a lot of people who experience Rikers Island call it the Bridge of Pain. And, you know, basically he will be like go to a holding, like a processing of one of the processing facilities. And because of, you know, the high profile of the case, of this case, I believe that Mr. Mangione, if he's detained on Rikers, he will have the same experience as the over 6,000 people detained there now because of the nature, you know, high-profile nature of the case. Like, usually the department separate high-profile people in high-profile cases from the general population. For example, like you mentioned earlier, the media mogul Harvey Weinstein, you know, he was on Rikers Island for a very short period of time and moved to the Bellevue Hospital, where he had his own private room, his own phone, his own bathroom, his own television, a whole bunch of other perks. And then one of the news outlets had reported that, and probably like hours later, because of the embarrassment of the VIP treatment he was getting, they sent them back to Rikers Island. So, but basically, I assume that he would probably be like in involuntary protective custody, what they call IPC, and he'll be separated from the rest of the population there. And he'll have a very different experience for the people, you know, the thousands of people are there.
So, I mean, Luigi is probably going to have something similar to Harvey, and we'll get to that in a second. But tell me what I mean, Harvey's a whole other story, but what's his day like when he's now back at Rikers? Does he just sit in a cell alone all day, basically?
Yeah, basically in a holding cell, waiting to get processed, you know, changing with clothes, shower, you know, getting his clothes and his linen, his mattress, and taken to a housing unit, which would probably be a secure, isolated housing unit from the rest of the population.
And people are asking, well, how come Diddy's not there? Diddy is charged with federal crimes, and that's why he's at the MDC, the Metropolitan Detention Center, which is also notorious, and that is in Brooklyn, which is where Darren Mack is from, at least originally. Thank you to A.D. Jones for becoming a YouTube member. And as Ned Smith says so accurately, it would not be STS without at least one animal saying hello. We do love animals. Chewy, come sponsor us right now, immediately. So, Edwin, to you, when you heard the story of Luigi Mangione, this guy who just in Midtown Manhattan, and by the way, are you from New York City, Edwin?
Yeah, born in Queens.
Born in Queens. There you go. So you hear that.
The only borough that I haven't lived in was Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah? Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off there. So this is Luigi Mangione. You hear the news. This guy is on 6th Avenue between 54th and 55th Street, and then he guns down the CEO of United Healthcare. After you heard this, what were you thinking about this person?
He's living in the movie. They even have the thought process to conduct an act like such, allegedly. But I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. There seems to be a lot of evidence. Obviously, everybody is, again, presumed innocent, getting yelled at for, look at this. I have a Jewish mother. Now I have a lot of other mothers, thanks to the STS community. I don't know how old Jane is, but she's yelling at me to speak louder. Justina, let me get to you. So tell me, because I'm interested, like my mother's a social worker. You're a social worker. What was your day like at Rikers? And is it like the movies where you're getting catcalled and whistled? You're obviously a young woman, a lot of high testosterone men in there. What was your day like, the reception from them, and your daily routine?
Yeah, so my daily routine, I would supervise the units. I have two units. I would supervise the clinicians on the units. They had to do treatment plans, meet with those patients. So I would go over that with them. And if somebody decompensated who was severely mentally ill, I would also refer them to Bellevue, to their prison ward. And with the deadlocking, unfortunately, all the patients were decompensating so quickly because they were locked in a cell. They had no access to their medications, and I would have to send them to Bellevue. And a lot of times they would come back. And then when they would come back, they would go back to the cell. And the cells were smeared with feces, with flies. They were not even allowed to come out to take a shower. And it's something that I have never witnessed in my life. And I was so shocked when I saw all of this happening. And as you mentioned, me being a social worker, we have an ethical obligation to report abuse. So I couldn't just stand their work there and see this going on. I knew that there was something I had to do about this.
We're going to get back to that. And again, the whole issue of not being fixable. But I was waiting for this because Rikers Island is fine. It's a jail, not a resort. People in this country are going to, you know, a guy like Luigi Mangione, who's got a lot of evidence that is piled up against him. What lawyers call bad facts. You know, there's going to be a bias in the media. There's no doubt about it. People are going to, you know, basically convict him in the court of public opinion. But what about, I just would like to get your response to that comment that it's not a resort, it's a jail, and these guys basically don't deserve, you know, deserve poor treatment in essence.
Yeah. I think it was, this philosopher, Dostoevsky, right? He wrote that the degree of civilization is not measured by, you know, how you treat the rich or the rich and famous. It's like, it's how you treat the most unfortunate people in prison. I think it was it's jail, but we have to remember, like, the people detained on Rikers Island, 90% of the people detained there are there pretrial. They haven't been convicted of anything. You know, most people are detained there because they can't afford to pay bail. If you're wealthy, you won't spend a usually won't spend a day unless the judge feels that you're a flight risk, so they won't give you bail. But regardless of the fact, whether the people they detain there, they should still be treated with human rights. If we value as a society human rights, if people should be treated human rights regardless, even if they convicted, if we believe in human rights, we should value that and uphold that for anybody, especially when they detained pretrial and they have the
Well, Darren, of those 90% who are detained pretrial, do you know what percentage of those ultimately get convicted? I mean, are the majority of people there convicted?
Yeah, I don't know what percentage, but I know a lot of people like plead guilty. You know, just like in New York City, there was the Central Park Five, known as the Exonerated Five, where they was arrested to give a false confession, spent years in prison, and then years later, they find out somebody else testified and came out publicly that they was the one that committed that crime. But they went through this horrible experience. Look at even Khalif Browder. He was an 18-year-old kid accused of stealing a $70 book bag, spent 3 years on Rikers, and 2 of those years in solitary confinement. He went through all of that, and he said, hey, plead guilty, and you got a year in already. We'll give you time served, and you could go home today. But he said no. Because he didn't commit that crime, he fought the case, and eventually they dismissed the charges because they didn't have enough evidence. But that experience traumatized him so much, he eventually took his own life, and that's what kind of spurred the movement to close Rikers because of the corruption, as Justina mentioned, and because of the horrific conditions and the suffering that's been happening for far too long.
Oh, that's a good point. Khalif Browder, a huge story in New York City. Steve LaPointe here. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. Mike saying that he thought Luigi Mangione would get away with it. Edwin, to you, obviously, I hear what Darren is saying, but there are obviously a lot of guilty people there as well. Why do you think so many people, but especially Luigi Mangione, didn't kind of think this out? I mean, obviously he did because he was well prepared, but why didn't he think, now there's a very good chance to be spending the rest of his life behind bars. What is it about, people who have a tendency to commit crimes, especially the worst of them, like murder, where they're not thinking, hey, the result of this is going to be now my life's taken away because I have to go to prison.
I'm sorry, my connection is unstable. I wasn't able to even hear what you had just asked me.
I was just asking you, why do you think criminals who are convicted and guilty, why are they not thinking, well, if I kill this person, now my life's ruined. I'm going to be in prison the rest of my life. Why isn't that extra step taken? Well, he's cutting out. So Edwin's got a... little shoddy service. So Darren, I'm going to toss that back to you and COE. I'm going to just bounce him out while he's trying to get back in and you can bring him back in. But Darren, why is there not like this forethought and afterthought about what the repercussions could be? Hey, I kill this guy. I don't like the way the healthcare system is, whatever Luigi Mangione or anyone else's motive. They're not thinking about the other families, their families. Everyone's a victim here.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not an expert psychologist, but there was times when people would make a case for themselves when crimes like this happen, and I think they call it the heat of the passion moment. Like a man saw his wife in a bed with another man and he killed him, and it's probably no really thought about it. Some people just reactionary. And they take, they take matters into their own hands instead of really like thinking of the deal with situations like that. But it could be a variety of reasons, and I'll definitely be interested as well to like understand the psychology what like drove him. There's been a lot of reports, about that his family was denied some medical, and so that could be a driver. It could be various factors could drive people to do certain things, and especially like from his background. There's reports out there that he came from a very wealthy family. His grandmother left millions, like $30 million to the family. And, what would drive a person like Harvey Weinstein, who was a media mogul, to do what he do? That's a great question.
Yeah. Very good question. If I may say so myself, but Justina, to you, this is kind of up the social workers' alley here. So this, to me, this was, there was a press conference on Tuesday, and aside from the fact that he's being charged with first degree murder, second degree murder, and, you know, acts of terrorism and all these other things, what happened was the mother, Kathleen, stopped hearing from her son back in July. And then in November, she files a missing persons report. She thought he was living in San Francisco. He was actually in Honolulu. So now the San Francisco police are looking for this guy, and they contact, they see kind of the wanted posters, all the pictures that we've seen. And a sergeant in the San Francisco PD says, this kind of looks like my missing person. So he calls the mother. So the guy in San Francisco calls the mother, and the detective in New York, this is a little convoluted, he relayed the story. So he said they had a conversation where she didn't indicate that it was her son in the photograph. So she doesn't tell him, yeah, that's my son. But she says it might be something that she could see him doing. In other words, she could see him murdering somebody. What does that tell you about the family dynamic? What does it tell you about his state of mind?
Right. Yeah, so her saying that, maybe there were some signs earlier, maybe he was very outspoken about like reasons why he would want to do this. But that is definitely troubling to hear that, like, she could see him doing that. A lot of times people that commit murder would be considered psychopaths. Sometimes they hurt animals when they're children. They lack empathy. So maybe that's what was happening with him. But it's difficult to say because we're not sure exactly what happened. I didn't speak to the mom, so it's difficult to say.
I'm getting reprimanded by Space Ghost. I know, Space Ghost, we've got to get this camera back up. You're yelling at me, but so's a chiropractor. You guys saw the behind the scenes here. It's a very convoluted, and it's a good thing that vacation is coming on up. So if you could, Edwin, can you hear me now? Yeah, awesome. So I asked Darren this. What's it like to walk down the halls of Rikers the very first time? What is that? Tell us what that paint the picture of that experience.
My first time walking down Rikers Island, I had to put my head down and put my hands behind my head. I couldn't look at any officers' faces. There was a unit there of, I guess, highly classified officers that they actually had assault weapons on them. And just walking past them with your head down and your hands up was a very serious situation of being escorted to your block and just not knowing what's going to happen next. It's very uncomfortable, highly uncomfortable. That's all I can say.
And now, are people, like, you know, you see in the movies, are they yelling through their jail cells to the new guys? What are they saying to you? I mean, how scared are you?
Well, it depends. There are individuals who bump into people that they know all their life from being on the street together. So it's different for everybody. My experience was more along the lines of thinking how I was going to eat, because there was no, when you first arrive to the island, you're not getting financial assistance when there. So you really have to worry about how you're going to eat, how you're going to survive, how you're going to make a phone call, because you cannot yourself access those resources. You can't put money on your cell phone account, on the phone account, or utilize the communication system. So you're dependent on an outside resource that you might not even have a connective avenue to.
Yeah. And by the way, Luigi Mangione, as you heard Darren say, comes from a lot of money. And he's already had something. We're going to get to it in a little while, like 158 deposits into the commissary. I'm going to tell you how many visitors he's had and who they were. But Darren, before we get that, again, just so everyone knows, tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m. in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Luigi Mangione is going to have a preliminary hearing, and that's supposed to be filed by an extradition hearing. But all reports point toward the fact that he's going to waive extradition. His own attorney spoke to CBS and said that. So he's going to waive extradition, and then he's going to be transported back to Manhattan. So there's going to be the morning in Pennsylvania, and then very likely you'll see in the evening is when he's got his first hearing before a judge in New York City. So, Darren, you guys have been there. What is central booking like in Manhattan? I sort of asked you this earlier, but walk us through that. He gets fingerprinted, he gets his mugshots, and then where do you get sent to stand in front of a judge?
Yeah, it's been a long time, and I was in I went through central booking in a Brooklyn system. But like just as you described, like get his fingerprinted, taking the photograph, going to the holding cell, and basically waiting to to have a hearing in front of the judge. You know, he might have a discussion with his attorney if it's court appointed. You know, or if it's like, you know, a private attorney. Just to think about, like, maybe try to get bail. I think in the Pennsylvania case, he was denied bail. The New York case, it might be, you know, the attorney's going to ask for bail. And if he's given a bail, you know, like was mentioned earlier, his family has the money to pay bail. So he will probably get bailed out and won't even see Rikers Island, possibly. Or maybe he'll get bailed, but they will still hold it because he has the bail hold in Pennsylvania. So, so I don't know how would that look like.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting out. I think they're going to hold him. The question is, do they hold him? Do you think he's too, look, the whole world was following this case. Is he too high risk to put into Rikers, in your opinion, Darren?
Too high risk? I don't think so. There was a lot of, you know, celebrities and entertainers that have been on Rikers. Lil Wayne was on Rikers. You know, so many. I think Tupac spent some time on Rikers, and then we got like right today, right now, Harvey Weinstein is on Rikers, and I don't think it's too high risk, but I definitely believe that he will have like different treatment. He will be isolated from the rest of the population, for safety and security, and yeah, he will just have a different experience for the thousands of people who are detained there.
Yeah. Anna Kaminsky, I'm gonna get there in 2 seconds, COE. Anna Kaminsky, she's a best guest on our show. She's a professor at New York Law, and she was asked by CBS her opinion. She said that the idea, and I'm quoting here, is we want to, in terms of the extradition, the idea is we want to be able to get him over here to answer the charges that are pending here in New York. So in a matter of a day or two at most, a lot of people think that he will be there tomorrow in New York. Many others said when this first happened, it would probably be after the first of the year, but he might be spending Christmas in Rikers, which we can ask our guest about. But the advantage, she says, to extradition is he gets his case to begin, right? So he gets, it's all about speedy trials, a right to a speedy trial. That is her contention is, look, he waives extradition, he gets to New York faster, and everything can be put into motion. COE, do you mind? I can bring it up here. I just want to make sure. COE, this is a little news story that the COE picked out or up of Rikers Island from a couple years back. Let's take a look, COE.
Several units that were unstaffed completely. There was no correctional officer physically in the unit. And I can't remember looking under a sheet or a mattress and not seeing a shank under one of them, because frankly, anybody would want one to keep themselves protected because there was no correctional officer to keep them protected.
NBC News recently obtained more than 100 hours of surveillance video from inside Rikers. Scenes like this, an attempted knifing averted by an officer and an inmate organized so-called fight night where some detainees were forced to participate.
That is really scary. I'm going to play it back without sound, but for B-roll. But that is super scary. I mean, Edwin, how many of the guys that you knew had shanks on them because they felt unsafe and felt like they needed a weapon in there?
Well, the better question is how many officers were passing those around?
Mm. Tell me about it. I mean, are the officers there, would you say, across the board, they're corrupt? I mean, are there any good officers or well-intentioned corrections officers there?
Me knowing individuals who are captain on the island, who are captains on the island from personal relationships, I can say that there are good officers there, definitely. You know, there are some officers who are trustworthy. But the only thing I can say is the first time that I was on Rikers Island, I was 16 years old. and being exposed to the officers handing off a weapon to another individual who was 16 was just mind-blowingly shocking to me. Having seeing the COs empty out classrooms for inmates to battle was just, it's like out of a movie. You know, like these are officers emptying classrooms on the educational floor. It was just absurd, you know?
Yeah, when you went in at 16, people here, and there's a lot of people here from outside the States, so some of them don't even understand how you can be 16 in Rikers. When you were there, like at 16 years old, I mean, I can't imagine, but at that point in your life, like, were you trying to make friends in the joint? Or were you trying just laying low by yourself? What was your strategy of survival in there?
Well, my thought process was more so along the lines of being exposed to this environment, having to adapt as needed. I wasn't affiliated with anything, but being exposed and seeing that the correction officers were actually actively participating in unrealistic things, it was just I had to survive and cope. So just finding those avenues to navigate, that's what really was on my mind, and just seeing who I can connect with, who I can build a relationship with in order to survive.
I want to come back and just again ask you, because I'm curious how you just turned everything around and how hard that is. But Justina, to you, someone, and he's having trouble with the Wi-Fi there. I'd rather be dead, someone said, than live like this. And then there's this question, which I think is obviously meant, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek, but on a serious note here, obviously he's very unhappy about the healthcare system in America. We're talking about Luigi Mangione. People think that's the motive. What can he expect in Rikers if he gets sick, gets a cold, gets the flu? What's going to happen to this guy? Breaks an ankle?
So he is not going to get any medical help. It takes a long time for people to be seen. They request to be seen by a doctor and they don't come. There was a recent case of Charisma Jones who passed away on Rikers, and she was ill and sick and they didn't provide any medical care for her. So he's going to have a very difficult time because the medical care there is horrible. I had patients all the time complain that they called to see a doctor every day and have not seen a doctor. And then the Department of Corrections will say that those individuals refused to go see a doctor.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, Justina, do you think that these conditions, again, this is kind of a mix of life at Rikers for Luigi, but also just life at Rikers and prison reform. And because I just went on that little tangent, I forgot what I was going to ask you, but I'll remember and I'll come back to you in a minute. But we mentioned it's going to probably be there for Christmas in Rikers. You spent a few there, Darren. What? Tell me about that. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Is it a different mood? What's it feel like in there?
Yeah, it's always hard, you know, during the holiday times, you know, when people with families are gathering together and you're sitting in the jail cell, you know, don't really not around family members and friends. And it's probably like the most down moment of being incarcerated during the holiday times. And one of the things that, you know, sometimes happens, like half of the population on Rikers Island has a mental health diagnosis. A lot of people don't know that. 20%, half of the population, so that's over 3,000 people on Rikers Island right now have a mental health diagnosis. You know, some people come...
Say that again. I missed the number. One more time. What's the number on that?
Over half of the population of Rikers Island, over 3,000 people have been diagnosed with a mental health challenge. Some people develop a mental health illness there. Some people come in with mental health illness and never got diagnosed and they find it. And then others come in with mental health illness and because of the conditions, the horrific conditions, it's exacerbated. And 20% of that population that has a mental health illness have what they call SMI, serious mental illness, meaning they have two diagnoses or more. And since this mayor been in office, actually, it's been an increase, like a 62% increase of people with SMIs on Rikers Island. And as Justina said, you know, the person that she was a whistleblower for had a mental health issue and they locked them in a cell for 24 hours for days and weeks, and they didn't get the medical attention that they need. So it's basically Russian roulette for the majority of people detained on Rikers Island.
Wow. Darren, I don't know that I mentioned this off the top. I apologize. So what is your organization? Where do people find you? We'll do it again at the end, but just let everyone know.
Yeah. Freedom Agenda is a grassroots member-led organization dedicated to organizing people and communities directly impacted by incarceration in order to achieve decarceration assisted transformation. And we're one of over 190 organizations across New York City that make up the campaign to close Rikers Island. And in 2019, we pushed City Council and the former mayor to pass legislation to close Rikers Island by August 31st, 2027. And that's the work. You can find us on campaigntoclosericus.org, and you can find us on Freedom Agenda NY on social media.
All right. Freedom Agenda and Campaign to Close Rikers .com. If you want to take up a cause dealing in prison reform. Edwin, to you, were you there when COVID was happening? I don't know how long you've been out, but do you know what it was like there, by the way, speaking of healthcare, prisons, Rikers, and COVID? Edwin, do you know?
Well, for me, myself, I was actually in prison during the COVID pandemic, and I was in my own world, isolated. I was in Five Points Correctional Facility, and there was controlled movement. There was no access to the outside world in the sense that we weren't getting any visits. Everything was stopped. So re-entering around the time that COVID was dying down, it was like if the 3 years that you guys were all facing COVID, it didn't happen. It didn't exist. And this is just me from my experience, you know?
Wow. I know you were out, Darren, and I'm coming back to you, Justine, in a minute. But Darren, what were you hearing about inside of Rikers during COVID?
Yeah, it was a human rights crisis. People were dying. People with a lot of complaints that the people detained weren't getting masks. And it was like, yeah, there was definitely reports that came out that people died from COVID. People were, thank goodness, because of the urgency of the crisis, people were released. But then people who had COVID bringing it back into the city and, like, you know, died from COVID. It was a human rights crisis. And, you know, advocates like myself and others, you know, was pushing the city, we need to actually release people. Like, if a person got a week left or a month left or 2 months left, you know, we need to start releasing people because the city was on shutdown. People are going to just be home. And actually, during COVID, the population of Rikers Island has shrunk to under 4,000 people for the first time in almost 90-year history because of releases.
Yeah. You know, I asked Darren this, Justine, but I want to ask you the same question. You know, 90%, he said, of the people there are awaiting their trial. But if we're going to be honest, the vast majority are found guilty when they're brought to a, you know, criminal court. And so I guess the question is, there's going to be a lot of people who say, we don't care. Like, there's people saying in the chat right now, I don't care about Luigi Mangione, killed someone. What do you say to those people? About, you know, these guys who are convicted and they're in these jails, do they still deserve the decency of, you know, human rights and humanity and decent living conditions despite the fact they're serving time?
Right. So most of the people in New York City, they plead guilty. They're not found guilty. They take a plea deal. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's definitely like in the 90s. And yeah, they're in jail. They're already facing the consequences for their actions. So why should we just punish them even more and more? And eventually, these individuals are going to be released into the community. Just like the recent case regarding Ramon Rivera, who spent time on Rikers, was released and a month later killed three people in New York City. And that's because he didn't receive the help and the support that he needed while on Rikers and when he came out.
I think some people will argue that point with you and just say this is an evil guy. But do you think it was a mental health? In your opinion, Darren, I'll let you jump in. But why do you say that, Justina?
Because I know it was a mental health issue. Yeah.
You were dealing with them. Darren, I just want you to jump in there because a lot of people are going to jump on Justina for that and say, guy's a cold-blooded killer. Like, there's nothing that people at Rikers could have done to rehabilitate him. You know, he just went out and did this, and he deserved worse in Rikers. So what do you say to them?
Yeah, you know, there's people, you know, that believe, like, you know, stealing something, you should get your hand cut off for stealing, you know, but that's not the system that we live in, you know, thank goodness. And it, you know, the main issue is that people, you know, if someone caused harm, you know, that they be held accountable, but at the same time that we treat, you know, people, whether it's someone's son, someone's mother, someone's daughter, that we treat them with humanity and with human rights. Because, you know, if we're a country, like, and a lot of people don't know that 77 million Americans have a conviction. And if we believe in second chances, if we believe that people be treated fairly and with human rights, we need to uphold those values regardless of, like, what someone has done. You know, if we believe in due process, you know, I know if I was accused of causing harm, I want due process. I want my son and my mother. So it has to be across the board. It just can't just be for a few because of their, you know, because of, you know, certain situations. And we have to uphold, you know, human rights and due process and second chances, you know, for everyone across the board. If that's the values that we actually believe in.
Gotcha. And that's a huge number. Out of 300 million or 350 million Americans, that's a massive number. You said 70 million or
7 million Americans.
77 million have a conviction.
Yes.
I don't know what that says about our country, but that's almost like a third of the country, right?
Yes, 4 out of 3 adults. Yep.
Wow. Edwin, to you, getting back to Luigi, you know, obviously, again, we've talked about it, very wealthy, good-looking guy with ripped abs that some women find attractive. What is he going to be a target in prison? Is he going to be extorted? What are the other inmates going to do to him? And do they all know he's coming in?
Well, due to the media coverage, I wouldn't see somebody not see him coming in. But depending on how he is as a person and if he can handle his own in the sense of if he's easy targeted, I wouldn't be able to speak on that because I don't know him as an individual. He could be an individual who's just naturally adaptive and can adapt to an aggressive environment and hold his own. He can even come out on top. You know, the benefit of the doubt is given. I've seen it before, so it's an unknown and just hoping for the best. I don't like seeing anybody get hurt or go through anything traumatic. So,
no. Yeah, that's a good thing. Ned Smith, who's one of our, she's OG. She's been here forever, friend of the show, friend of ours. She talked about Luigi, but this made me think. Darren, you always see prison or jail kind of one dimensionally on TV, but take us in there three-dimensionally, like the noise level, the smell, the food. What's it like in Rikers?
Oh, it's terrible. It's something I wouldn't wish on anybody. That's why, you know, myself and Edwin, who experienced this, you know, firsthand, even, you know, people that work there like Justina and, you know, family members, you know, came to the conclusion, like, it can't be fixed. You know, mayor after mayor after mayor tried to make reforms, you know, tried to, you know, give put more money into to make changes, you know, train staff, you know, better to treat people like human beings. Like right now, well, I think for the past 9 to 10 years, there's been a federal monitor over Rikers Island because of excessive use of force. And just like within the last week or two, the federal judge basically stated that the city was in contempt of court to make those changes because it can't be fixed. And that's why, you know, we're pushing, you know, the closing. You know, there's been a whole bunch of reports about, you know, unsanitary conditions. And that's something that's been there for decades. But, you know, even when I was there as a teenager in the early 90s, when the population was over 20,000 people detained on Rikers Island.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but are there some people there who are serving out, like, life sentences who have been convicted, or it's only pretrial?
Yeah, it's 90% or average 90% of the people are dead pretrial. You have like 8% of people who are dead for city sentences, meaning they've been sentenced to a year or less, like they could get 90 days or a year. And then there's a smaller, even a much smaller population, probably about 2 to 3% who been sentenced to a state sentence, meaning a year or more. Like you might have people that have 1 to 3 years, 5 to 10 years, or even 25 to life. That's waiting there to be transferred to a state prison in New York.
Do you happen to know, like, the person who's been there the longest right now, how long they've been there for?
Not right now, but I know that one of our members at Freedom Agenda, Anna, her son was on Rikers for 6 years fighting the case. And because of Anna's advocacy in the campaign to close Rikers, he was being harassed by staff, by the jail guards. And to the point, he just like gave up and said, you know what, I'm just plead guilty. And he was basically sentenced to, I think, 10 years flat. And to just get out of that, oppressive, violent, dysfunctional environment. So
I was going to say, it's like a war of attrition. Like, you just give up after a while. You're like, just sentence me, right? And that's...
Justina mentioned, like, about 90% of the people plead guilty. They're not, usually don't go to trial and convicted by a judge or trial by a jury. Most people plead guilty, and people sometimes they get time served. Sometimes they get a city sentence. Sometimes they might plead guilty to 10, 5, 10, 15 years. And just to resolve the case. But it's tragic because like the average stay on Rikers Island is like 240 something days. And for people with mental health, it's even much longer than that. And like New York, unfortunately, the court process is there's a lot of delays with serious cases. And that's something that, judges and DAs and public defenders are trying to work on to fix that, because it's a tragedy for a person, like a family of someone who's been harmed, to wait a year or 2 years or 3 or 6 years for a case to get resolved. And we definitely could do better than that.
Mm. Shout out to McSpunk, you haven't seen in a while. He's another OG here. And Canine Catherine coming to us from Maui. She's always in the chat. Love having both of them. Chelsea Whitaker, she is another OG, friend of the show. You look at other prisons in Switzerland, things are much different. We can get to that in a couple minutes. But one of the other topics, Justina, or issues I wanted to talk to you about is, and none of this is confirmed, this is pure speculation, but some people say 26 years old, that's how old Luigi Mangione is, and maybe he just had some sort of mental break. It is an age where young men can develop schizophrenia or other things. So back in relation to mental health, evaluations and the mental health treatment he will get in Rikers, am I asking a foolish question? Because you're not going to, like, let's just say he is now schizophrenic. I'm not saying he is, I'm saying hypothetically, then what kind of treatment would he get at Rikers? Just medication? Would he be speaking to a therapist? How would that work?
So he would receive medication. However, like I mentioned, sometimes people are not taken to get their medications or they don't come on the unit. So it's not a guarantee that he would be able to have his medication every day. He would do an assessment and he would meet with a therapist, a clinician, but those sessions are very brief. It's really just to see how the person is doing. It's not actual like mental health treatment.
Mm. Abby Crossan, thank you very much for this super chat. SDS is truly taking it to the next level. Thank you. Refining the focus, adding new programming, building incremental content. I can't wait to see SDS light the YouTubes on fire in 2025. That's going to happen after I take a vacation, because that fire is going to peter out quickly if I don't get to one soon. But I got to say, it is a team effort. The COE is a glue that keeps us together behind the scenes, the chief of everything. You got Steve Cohen, the best booking producer in the business, who we like to call Meev Moen. Space Coast on the West Coast. He is an audiophile and audio genius, and does a lot of the behind the scenes work, including putting out the audio podcast, of course, the mods. And I always say, you see it here, I say best guess on this side, better community on the other side. You got the best community in all of true crime. So thank you for that. Justina, back to you. There was a question earlier about the elderly. It's not, my mom is now 85, not that she's elderly, but she's up there in her years. What happens to older people at Rikers or elsewhere in these prisons?
So older adults stay on Rikers. They will be transported to Bellevue or another hospital to get treatment, but they will do their time, finish their time on Rikers Island. And there, I know there's been also articles about individuals who were sent to the hospital and a few minutes later died. And that's because they were not receiving that treatment while they were on Rikers. So they're going to spend, if they're dying, they're going to spend their last days and moments of life on Rikers Island. And going back to healthcare, it's been proven that people who are in prison and in jail, like Rikers Island, their health deteriorates at a faster pace than individuals in society because of the food that they receive, the trauma that they experience, having not having access to medications and medical care.
Yeah. Someone here is asking about Rex Huerman. He's the accused Long Island serial killer. He's not at Rikers. He's out on Long Island. Rikers is for the city of New York, and he is in Suffolk County out there. Thank you, McSpunky. Happy holidays. Blessings right back to you and everyone. STS, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate, have a good one, and appreciate everybody being here. Truly three best guests. Yes, I agree. So, Edwin, we're getting a little information about Luigi. So he's not in a jail, speaking of this, in Pennsylvania. He's actually in a state prison because he is high security. And I think they wanted a scary one, too. Man, it was built in like 1889. It's freaky looking. But we know now, Edwin, he's received 40 emails, 53 pieces of mail, and three visitors, none of whom are family. They're all attorneys. So, again, 40 emails, and for all the public, you know, like endorsement of this guy, for lack of a better term, 40 emails and 53 pieces of mail in a country of 370 million people, not a lot of support for him. So, Edwin, you think he's feeling alone and just like, what is going on right now?
I wouldn't think so. Personally, I wouldn't think so because me, myself, I had about three visitors in the whole 5 years that I was incarcerated, and I didn't feel alone with that. So that support went a long way. I can imagine what was going through his mind. Hopefully he sees the available opportunities that he's has in front of him, especially when it comes to the legal support. So it seems like he has his plate full.
Yeah. And Edwin, when you say that you were, you know, you had three visitors in 5 years, not, family didn't come up or to see you? Was a trip too far? Did they not care? How did that affect your mental health?
Well, my mother developed cancer while I was incarcerated and eventually passed away.
Sorry.
So just going through that, I appreciate that. Just going through that, it was more so along the lines of having a child here back at home and determined to get back home into the community, which was a part of my rehabilitation, just having that motivation to get back to being a father and an active member of the community, because as a New Yorker who's lived in all boroughs now, except for Brooklyn, feeling that there's a bigger part that I can play in the community to help uplift others. And that's where I'm at today.
Yeah. So you have, can I ask you, are you married? You have a child, you said?
I'm single, single father.
Single father. Okay. How old's your child?
He's eight.
Eight. And I mean, it's got to be hard because I'm assuming you and I have slightly different backgrounds. Like my mom was all over me. I had a dad who was a doctor. You, I'm sure, have a very different background. And, you know, it's such a fine line in this world. You know, it's kind of a lottery system. And same with Darren. You know, he's born into a bad, really hard, difficult part of Brooklyn, which is where Mike Tyson, ironically, is from, Brownsville. But how are you now going to, you know, keep yourself out of trouble? You seem like such a good guy, but you probably had, you know, you were kind of like behind the eight ball to begin with. So how do you now, you know, tell yourself, I'm going to stay out of trouble, going to do better? Is it an everyday battle for you?
Well, I'm a man that's strong on faith, and I just leave everything to God in the sense that I'm continuing to read the books that were given to us and just take those as my advice in order to move forward and just make every day about having good deeds in my life. And the more good deeds I can do, the better. Advocating for the community and just building bridges.
I'm getting the chills from that. So is it a boy or a girl, your child?
Oh, he is eight, my son.
He's eight. Awesome. I have a five, soon to be 6 year old. I'm probably 50 years older than you, so I did it late, but that's cool. We'll have to have them hook up one day and meet up, and they can wrestle each other. But you know, I'm not wrapping the show yet. I'm very impressed that people are able to turn their lives around. So kudos to you for doing that. I mean, Darren, how tough, you again were a teenager in the early 90s, so you and I are of similar age, definitely different backgrounds, I would say. But how are you able to literally, I mean, man, if you heard the things that I whine about, but how are you able to turn your life around and then keep it turned around?
Yeah, I had a lot of support. You know, I have a big family raised by both my parents who actually just celebrated the, 63rd anniversary.
Oh, congrats. That's amazing. You know,
and, you know, I have a really large family, and I had a lot of support on the inside. I had the opportunity to get involved with a college program called the Bar Prison Initiative. There's a documentary about that about the program called College in Prison. You can find it on PBS. And, you know, got my associate's and bachelor's degree. Then I was released, came home, and got involved with advocacy around these social justice issues. And ultimately, you know, wind up getting my master's degree at Hunter College. And now I'm a co-director of Freedom Agenda, you know, working on this issue to close Rikers, because I don't want to see anybody, you know, go through that experience that so many people, unfortunately, you know, have lost their lives and suffer with mental health issues. And, you know, it's a financial waste too. $2.6 billion a year that we spend in, you know, more than any other, you know, jail system in the country is the highest, and we could be utilizing that money for better things like housing, like mental health, you know, and social programs. So that's what kept me on track.
Yeah, we try to keep things, even though the subject matter is always tough in true crime, we try to keep things a little light. So I think you guys will appreciate this. I've got two dogs at home, Fred and Ethel, but Fred is a pug. He just turned a year old. He's a menace. And so we put him in the SHU, his own solitary housing unit. I got a sign up that says his name, but it also says, welcome to San Quentin State Prison. So he's in there. And because of this discussion tonight, the COE announced in the chat that she has let him out of, he's always out when I'm there, but now she's let him out. So I'm look, you've inspired people already. And Fred thanks you from the bottom of his heart that he is now a free man as well. But Analytical Blarney, thank you. She just had a super chat up there. She was saying it's a really tough time of year. I mean, Edwin, to you, in the system when you were in during the holidays, what's it like for you and the other prisoners in there?
Well, for me, it was a little different. I had a little network going on in a sense of inside community. So we'd get together and cook meals. I'd get the turkey. Somebody else would get the vegetables. And I'm sure Darren went through it as well. Somebody would get ingredients, and we just all come together and put it all together and just enjoy the food together. And in a sense that there's actually facilities that have 200 individuals being held on one side of the cell block. So there'd be 200 people, 200 different conversations or 100 different conversations, depending on how it's set up, music playing. And that's just the best we can make of it. That's literally.
Wow. You know, wow. Do you have friends who are on the outside now from prison?
Well, there's individuals who I've been able to get connected with and assist them in getting back on their feet, and we just keep that network growing, you know?
Good, good.
Just trying to positively create new avenues for individuals to come home, get employed, and just make a difference to the community.
Wow. Do you have a full-time, like, steady job? Is that something that you have, or is it tough to get?
Yeah, currently I'm working as an outreach specialist for the John Jay Institute for Justice and Opportunities.
Oh, awesome. Okay, good. Kelly Wentworth here. Joel, my dogs are named Lucy and Desi, closely related to Fred and Ethel. They're brother and sister. I'm a huge Lucille Ball collector. It's funny when you find things out like that. You never know what somebody's into. I collect the UFC action figures, which the COE is making me get rid of now. It's probably about time. Justina, haven't heard from you in a little bit. I'm sorry. We were all intrigued by the stories of these former inmates here. But It is a tough time of year, and you're the social worker, and this is why I decided I'm going to do a show on Christmas Eve, just because I know some people don't have a place to be or someone to be with. So I'll do something Christmas Eve. But what's your recommendation to people? We're kind of all over the place tonight with the show, but I love it. What's your recommendation to people who have a tough time this time of year? And I can guarantee you, to bring it full circle, Luigi Mangione is going to be one of those people.
Right. So my recommendation would be to be around people who support them and just not spend these holidays on their own, because it can be very lonely. So hopefully they do have a support network that they can spend time with, because it can definitely be depressing. And when I worked on Rikers Island, I didn't work on Christmas Day, but the day before and after, and I saw how depressing it was for the patients there.
I can guarantee you this, by the way, before I read this question, I'm going to get hate mail tonight. I always do. But people are going to say, well, why do you care about prisoners? This, first of all, the show wasn't necessarily intended to be that. But, you know, shows take on a life of their own. And the common thread here is Luigi Mangione, who took it in his own hands, according to police, to kill this CEO. And, you know, he's obviously got to have his day in court. But this comment just made me think, you know, people are going to be like, I don't want to change anything. But the question from Best Nancy is, what can we do to help affect change, Darren?
Yeah, it's so many issues in our world and you know, across the country. I think that, you know, find out what you're most passionate about or want to, you know, that you want to get involved with, and you have to join an organization. You know, you have to join an organization because, you know, prayer is good, but prayer without faith, without actions, is not really going to move the needle on a lot of the issues that's, you know, affecting our community, you know, affecting our, you know, a city, a state. So what we can do is like join an organization that's working on issues that you're passionate about to want to resolve.
Well said. By the way, if you guys appreciate the content here, we're working hard, all four of us, every day, plus the mods who are always here, and it is a thankless job. If you appreciate it, please hit that like button. Please subscribe. And we also have a Patreon channel where our Patreon page where the COE puts a lot of like court documents, all sorts of things in there. So and thank you. Look at this right on cue from Christine. We love Canada, by the way. Our OG true crime story is the murder for hire of Dan Markell, who was a Harvard undergrad, who was a rising legal scholar from Toronto, born in Montreal. So we've got a big Canadian contingency. Edwin, I'm curious just to get your take on this one. So the New York Police Commissioner, Commissioner Tisch, who she is newly appointed, at this press conference on Tuesday, and we'll wrap in a few moments and get some closing thoughts, but she said, and I quote, "We don't celebrate murders. There is no heroism in what Mangione did. This was a senseless act of violence. It was cold and a calculated crime that stole a life and put New Yorkers at risk." By the way, the hardest time this Christmas is going to be for Brian Thompson's family, his sons, who are going to be wondering, where is my father? Why was he taken from us? But what do you think of these comments, Edwin, that the police commissioner said this is not a heroic act? He just murdered somebody. Do you agree with her?
Honestly, wholeheartedly, I'm definitely not standing behind any murders. You know, that's just point blank, period.
Yeah,
it's not right.
Yeah, well said. And Darren, your assessment of that comment?
Yeah, I could see why she responded to responding that way, because there's been like at Wall Street, there was like these posters of like CEOs wanted, you know, all these CEOs, and then they had the person who was murdered with an X over his face, and that's just like making me think about like where the political climate is going, like what people are thinking to like to celebrate, you know, to celebrate this murder. Like, it's kind of like it's a lot of questions come to mind.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, again, to repeat, he's only, in a country of 350 million Americans, gotten 40 emails and 53 pieces of mail. By the way, his three visitors were all attorneys. One of them is Agnifilo. I always mispronounce that. The husband is Sean Diddy Combs' attorney. So they're obviously paying for a high-priced criminal defense attorney. Stephanie here, thank you for this. This is for those who are incarcerated at this difficult time of year. Please remember that there are good people in jail who support each other unconditionally. On Friday, we've got Phil Waters. He says, anybody at any given time can commit a crime given the right circumstances. I always think of that. People, I think Darren was saying it earlier, that could be crimes of passion, whatever it is. So it's a very fine line. And, some people cross that line and then you got to pay for it. She went on to say, the commissioner, we don't celebrate murders. We don't lionize the killing of anyone. And any attempt to rationalize this is vile, reckless, and offensive to our deeply held principles of justice. One more quick question to Darren, and then we'll get final thoughts. Luigi Mangione, since his time in Pennsylvania, he's had 158 deposits into his commissary account. Seems like a lot for being in there, I don't know, like a week or so, 10 days. What does that mean, 158 deposits? What's it like when you get that deposit in the commissary? What can you go and get yourself?
Yeah, it's a good feeling to get support, especially financial support when you're able to get the things that you need while being detained. You could get everything. It's usually mostly junk food. It's not really good nutritional fresh vegetables and fruit while you're incarcerated, whether in jail or prison. It's very rare and accessible, especially for people that have that might have special dietary needs. Like you might be vegan. It is not much things you could be accessible to. You might be kosher, or you might be halal, so it's definitely a challenge for people that have dietary restrictions. But the more financial support you could get, the more it'd probably be a little easier.
Yeah, great questions, COE. I have no idea what the answer. They don't tell you who they're coming from. I actually assumed it was the family, but you very well. I mean, noticeably absent as visitors is the family. I don't know if they're told to stay away, because it would obviously be a media frenzy if anyone caught wind of that. I don't know if it's a security issue, but the family has not been there. I'm sure, the mother and father and the sisters are just have no idea. It sounds like a lot of deposits. Family would only send a few deposits. You're asking the wrong guy. So, what do you think, Ed, when you think most of those deposits are coming from quote-unquote fans of his, or from family, or what?
I would hope that the families are showing the most support as they can possible. So I'm expecting at least, let's say, 5 out of the 100-plus deposits were from family. But even if they're from fans, that's great support. That's great added support, especially on a tragic situation like this.
His name is Edwin Hernandez. Had the pleasure of meeting him. It was a weird day where this show just kind of came together magically. You heard he's doing work on reform right now, helping prisoners reenter society. He did this after he served 5 years, and he's now a certified recovery peer addict, recovery peer advocate. That was a Freudian slip, and community organizer. Edwin, just your final thoughts. I'm going to leave it open-ended. Obviously, you got this high-profile criminal about to go into Rikers Island. Is he going to be chewed up and spit out? And anything else you want to add to the conversation? Also, if you want, let people know where they can find you.
Well, I'm a firm believer on thou shalt not kill. It says so in the books that I study. And it's just a tragic situation. And as to the second part, you actually cut out before I could even get to what you said.
I just wanted, how do people get a hold of you? Is there kind of a public facing? I think you said you're on LinkedIn. Is there somewhere people, if they want to reach out to you, can get a hold of you?
Yeah, of course. Instagram, Edwin John Hernandez. I'm on LinkedIn, Edwin J. Hernandez, and match the face and the tattoos.
Edwin John Hernandez sounds like a pop singer. So who knows, man? I feel like you would have a good voice. So we'll see what happens there. Darren Mack, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. You hear the accent. It was a community, as you heard, that was plagued with a high concentration of poverty, substandard schools, and high rates of unemployment among Black and Latino males in 1992. At the age of 17, Darren was arrested for being an accomplice to a robbery, sentenced to 20 to 40 years. He spent 20 straight years. Did those years ever feel like they were going to tick by? Did you feel like you were ever going to get out, Darren? And your final thoughts here tonight.
Yeah, I kept myself occupied, exercising, going to school, reading, doing a lot of reading and writing. So the days went by, the days and the weeks and sometimes even the months went by really quickly. But there was those moments, those days where it's like, man, it's been a year. Man, it's been 5 years. Man, it's been 15 years. And there's always those days, especially around the holidays. Those days is like, felt like, years. And but it went by, pretty quickly because I stayed active and I brought those habits out with me to stay active and, working and organizing around social justice issues, with Freedom Agenda and the campaign to close Rikers in New York City. And folks could find out more about the campaign to close Rikers if they go to campaigntoclosericus.org and Freedom Agenda, which I'm a co-director and co-founder of. We are social media at Freedom Agenda NY on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky.
I just joined Blue Sky, but I never heard of it till about 4 days ago, and I heard about it. But Darren, is there a limit on how much you can deposit in a commissary? Is there a limit on that, Darren?
That's a great question. I'm not sure.
Edwin?
There's a limit of spending.
All right.
I know in the state of New York, there's like $150 or was it $1,000? There's a cap in receiving.
Yeah, I'm a Reese's peanut butter addict. I'd be eating that. By the way, Darren, like when you're, just out and about walking through the streets of New York, I think you said you have kids, you have a wife, but what do you appreciate the freedom you think more than most people?
I think mostly everybody who spend, a significant amount of time in prison, especially like, 10, 20, 30, 40 years or more, definitely appreciate it. I've been home 12 years now and it's been days. It seems so surreal. Like, people don't like to go shopping with me because it's like I'll spend hours in the supermarket because it's so much, variety. But yeah, it's definitely surreal. I'm definitely appreciated and grateful for it. And mostly just to be around people, just to be around and learn about people and taste different food. So it's all, even after 12 years, it's so many things. That's such a new experience because I spent, most of my teens, all of my 20s and most of my 30s, incarcerated.
Wow. And you do have kids, did you say, in a family?
No, I don't have any children.
Okay. I thought you said that. So there's still time for you, Darren. My mom will get on your case about that. Last but certainly not least, we've got Justina. I'm not going to try to pronounce her last name. You can see it on the screen there. She is the Rikers whistleblower. She exposed abusive and inhumane treatment of severely mentally ill patients. She is working to get her PhD right now, and she's a licensed social worker. She helped put this all together tonight. I'm going to leave it open-ended for you, Justina, and where can people find you? A lot of people in this country, you heard 77 million get convicted. It's a lot of those spend time in these prisons. A guy that's probably going to spend a lot of time is Luigi Mangione. Your final thoughts tonight.
Thank you. I do feel like we as society fail these individuals. These individuals are coming home. So, for example, like I mentioned earlier, Ramon Rivera, I didn't work with him on Rikers, so I can't speak on how he was there. But even the mayor, Mayor Adams, did a press conference and said the mental health treatment and the criminal justice has failed this individual. So yes, we can look at him that he killed 3 people, but we have to look at the reasons why and how are we supporting these individuals when they come home? Because I've seen firsthand the treatment that they receive while they're incarcerated. And I think as a social worker and just a human being, whenever we do see any injustice, we have to speak up for it. Social workers have an ethical obligation, but like I said, just as a human being, I often wondered, don't these officers think about if that was their child or their brother or their uncle? Like, it can happen to any of us where we end up in jail. And it's, like I said, as human beings, we have to look at how are we treating these individuals. They're already incarcerated. They're in jail. They're paying for the consequences. So why punish them even more? And these are people with, like I said, with severe mental illness who were born with this mental illness. They did not ask for it. And most of the patients that I worked with on Rikers Island were in and out of foster care system, homeless, sleeping on the trains. And it's just another cycle.
Really well said. And people want you guys back. We'll bring back Edwin as well as Darren and Justina. Appreciate the three of you coming on such short notice. Really do appreciate that. Thank you to STS Nation. Tomorrow's going to be another busy day. Somehow I'm going to get the energy back up for that. But we've got Luigi Mangione. He's got a hearing in Pennsylvania in the morning, and then he's supposedly headed to New York. All this is subject to change, obviously. And then he could have a first hearing in court in New York City. So we're going to try to bring that stuff to you when it happens. And obviously talked a lot about Luigi Mangione tonight, but this guy, Brian Thompson, and his family are suffering this holiday season and for many years to come because of a pointless, horrible, stupid crime, which is murder. And you heard Edwin John Gonzalez say, "Thou shalt not murder." So there you go. It says it in the book. And everyone, it's my new thing now. Please be kind and unwind. It's like Blockbuster, not rewind, but unwind. Be kind and unwind. Love you, America. Love you, New York. Hope things improve everywhere when it comes to these horrific conditions. But if you do the crime, you got to do the time. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning.